to quote today's guest, Elias Lonsdale, as we pressed toward this new age of Aquaria, we realized we were traveling through the last strands of an old time. Elias's 45-year focused journey has and is developing into what he calls Star Genesis Wisdom. He is teaching Star Biography, which offers a visionary's life of eternal birthing and getting to know oneself. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Elias, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's my understanding that the work you are engaged in at the present time is named Star Biography. Can you draw us into what Star Biography is?
It's my discovery over the last 45 years of star work that each distinctive individual is a convergence between infinite reality all around them, joining forces with everybody and everything, and their own internal flame of destiny, of incarnation, of embodiment. And giving a biography is taking the weave with the world and the internal dimension of who we are and bringing them both together so that you become your world, and your world becomes you.
Are the origins linked to astrology?
In my work, yes. I devoted the 1970s to astrology full on, and also took it to esoteric levels with Billy Zucker in the Steiner Astrosophy esoteric system. So, yes, I versed myself completely in regular star work and astrology and astrosophy in the systems that are already known in order to apprentice myself to the masters, to the old ones, and to understand these things very deeply. And so, yes, it all came out of that.
Can you give a little background about the age of Aquaria, its relationship to the past age, and what we're doing in it right now toward moving into the future age?
Okay, there's a rough transitional time, which is happening over a 50-year period from 1987 to 2037. We're right in the midst of that. And in that rough transitional 50-year period, we are no longer in the age of the fishes. We are not yet fully in the age of Aquaria. We're pulled back and forth, in and out, and it's a very confounding time for many people. But what gradually, slowly happens, without our even being aware of it most of the time, is that the age of Aquaria gradually gets to be more and more of our experience. It goes from 10% to 50% to 80%. And before you know it, we find ourselves actually in the age of Aquaria, even though the collective is still pulling back in a conditioned way into the age of the fishes. So there's a transitional dynamic at work where we get to experience the seed future, and we get to experience the, you know, the rotting away of the past, and we have to kind of keep letting go of the past, whatever way we can do that, and opening ourselves to the future, whatever way that we're called to do that. And then the now becomes a richer, more full-spectrum world that's still not the way it's going to be, and it's no longer the way it was. It's very transitional, but it can be exceedingly active, engaged, and powerful, as long as you don't expect everything to be perfect and everything to be ideal.
Hence, a lot of this work, I've heard you say, is about our state and our states of relationship.
Yes. Yeah, we're in nets, we're in trances, we're in tribal spheres, we're in continuous circles around us, and we're learning how to be free in relation to each other and to free others in relation to us, and that's one of the most sharp evolutionary edges in our times.
So what are you seeing as, you know, this sharpness that's presenting itself? How do you see the movement beyond that into more of a pure relationship?
Well, it's a continuous ongoing challenge for me, because love is my nature, as it is everybody's nature, but it got enveloped, it had a cord around its neck. It was choking because I was caught in the contemporary relational politics, the ego mind competing, fighting against other ego minds. And I had to work for years and years to vibe down on that and to begin to realize that if I'm made of love, all I have to do is kind of go back inside, drop into where I really am, and be that expression of love. When love expresses through you, even though you don't know how to love, because none of us knows how to love, but when love expresses through you in all these amazing ways, then you discover how to become love and how to connect with other beings and worlds.
I imagine that this would bring up quite a big piece about being vulnerable and being too vulnerable. And how did you work with this for yourself? And then how do you recommend working with this for other students? What have you learned that you actually share so others can perhaps move through this or into this a little more easily?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. The main thing that I've had to learn is that vulnerability is not optional. It's a required course. It is not optional. We may prefer not to be vulnerable. I think just about everybody would prefer not to be vulnerable for a lot of reasons. But vulnerability is on the main course, and you can't get away from it. It's just that you need to embrace it from a free place. The key with vulnerability, and this is passing on to what it means for others, the key to vulnerability is you can't do vulnerability from a bondage place, from a place of obligation, a place of entanglement. When you do that, vulnerability really is corrosive, painful, traumatic. You have to be free within yourself and surrendered to the situation and responsive and accepting and embracing of what is in the other, in yourself, in the whole situation. And then vulnerability is a free deed. It's an offering. It's a sacrifice. But it isn't a diminishment.
Yes, and it's almost counterintuitive to think about that vulnerability, because we feel oftentimes that, okay, if I'm going to be vulnerable, I want to know where everything is and what's going on. And as I've heard you say in a talk, that it's not real to set up a world ahead of time, because we can't do that. We don't know what that ahead of time is. And so allowing for that open space is what we need for vulnerability, but it's like how to get there.
Yeah, it's an ongoing exercise in stripping away layers of reaction and judgment and association and memory, and it does take a lot of work. If you want to love, it's the hardest job in the world. I always used to notice in my earlier years that the two hardest jobs were being in relationship and being a parent, which I've done a lot of both. And that any other job you could possibly take, no matter how much it pays or requires of you, is easy. Those two jobs are tough. And the job of being with somebody else, well, all I can say is it means that you have to genuinely behold who you are with in this other and who you are with inside. And to genuinely behold, that is the great art. That's what we're trying to come back to. That's what I want to help people to find.
Where do you see people getting hung up? Maybe that's too broad a question as far as beholding oneself.
Um, the negative and the positive. We have past life associations, early life associations, various past associations with failing and succeeding, with falling short and being extraordinary. And both of those reinforce each other. We have this thing that we can either do it right or do it wrong. There's blame, there's shame, there's guilt, there's pride. So we're competing with ourselves to top this or to avoid that, or to, you know, we're trying to leverage through our own world, and that's what gets us to not be able to behold dispassionately, because from a genuine, spiritually focused beholding, you have no attitude, you have no opinion. You just perceive what is. You just be with what is. That's the key thing. And we're so accustomed in our worldly mind to make these distinctions and have this over here be it and that over there be that, be not it. It's that duality, that polarity consciousness, that's the place we get hung up.
Definitely. And it's like I'm finding more and more I just want to end sentences with is. You know, because otherwise we move either out of the present moment or we move into a judgment. And what's good today isn't necessarily good tomorrow, which is completely on par or parallel with karma and the karma wheel. And the karma seems to have such a huge stronghold at this time of new age or spiritual thinking. And it's just, karma seems to be a place where everyone's caught up with. And I'd like to hear you speak about that.
Yeah, I was a karmic addict as well until recently. I was always oriented toward karma really intensely, and I still love it. It's an old love of mine. I never can drop my old love, but it's I don't give much energy to it any longer, because karma, really what it is it's the record that's been kept of what has happened and how that impacts us and how we work with that, which is fine, that's useful, that's necessary. But there's a greater law, the law of love, which is coming into play in the world much more strongly than karma. It's just that it's coming on in this grace fashion that leaves everybody free to perceive it or not, go with it or not. That's the way greater love forces work. And so we're essentially being bathed in love, forgiveness, mercy, compassion, release, and we have to learn to tune into that, because the karmic thing is so rigorous. I'm not going to put it down. It's real. It's rigorous. It's intense. It's demanding. It's part of it. But we need this counterpart of this greater law of love so that we realize that spirit forces are fully actively in play and are seeking to support us and to bring us forth, and they're not neutral, and they're not absent, and they're not remote. They're right here, if we can be right here with them.
Yes, and it feels to me like letting loose of all of the cause and effect, and not banging our heads or following it down the eternal road of what causes that, causes this, and then...
Yes, because you're not... Obviously, your mind gets in the way of that and starts to evaluate on mental criteria, and mental criteria are always misleading. So you might as well, from the beginning, from the get-go, realize that if you keep score and try to, you know, be good and try to have the other one be bad and make sure that you're prevailing in your karmic struggles, that you're going to get tangled up in an incredible karmic knot that way, and you might as well live by love and see if that might work better.
Yes, that's a deep silence of love is certainly a good idea. You mentioned, perhaps even similar to this, an ancestral logjam, and you spoke a little bit of it earlier, of the things that affect us or hang us up. And there's the conscious effect of breaking it up, and then there are spontaneous things that happen. And I'm wondering how you see the good way to work is, and it's probably just different for everyone, but maybe you could share your experience and then how you work with students.
With what I call ancestral karmas? Okay, yeah, same thing, just another term. Okay, it's a tight, compressed space, whether karmic or logjam, it's a tight, compressed space, and it comes from being coercively held within a household when you're growing up where everybody else set the rules and you had to follow them. And something about that had a lot of backup in worlds beyond this one where the ancestors really exist and aren't just an abstraction, but that's a whole other story. So you basically have to work with your ancestral line, with your genetics, with your family of origin, with the psychology of things. You have to work with them in various ways. For me, what I see is that our ancestors are calling us back into an old way of life that has been our necessary way of life, sort of a security, stability, safety-oriented existence, familiarity, memory, trance. And we're having to sort of be with all that, and we need to move on from it because it's taking us away from the evolutionary cutting edge, and we can't really wander back there too much anymore.
Yes, and the survival of the fittest is changing. Those important things aren't as important anymore.
Yes, what's going to happen is that the whole field will morph. Very few people get this because we've been reducing our level of what we expect and assume so much. But actually, the whole field will morph. As we get into the age of Aquaria, everybody will be part of it. They won't all be as wakefully part of it as others, but essentially everybody will be part of a shift in the field. And so when that happens, when the Earth herself changes, then it's a whole different set of rules. It's a whole different set of assumptions. We essentially are sprung into a creative, regenerative space.
I've heard you speak about being and becoming. Is that where you're going with all of this piece?
Well, the being and becoming is the deepest level, and it has to do with that we learned how to be who we're not, and to become somebody we don't want to become. And we're now learning the deep, deep, deep lesson of how to make sure we be what we are and become far more than that toward the future. So essentially, we're reclaiming the primal ground of being and the extraordinary fertility of becoming after having given it over to where we weren't ourselves and we weren't becoming our potential. We were pulling back on the line based on all kinds of reasons, and that's where the basic key shift is.
In order to talk about these things, there's such a deep amount of knowledge that needs, in my mind, to be experienced in order to share, because the language of what you're talking about is not readily available, I don't believe.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have a feeling there's something further you're wanting to say with that. Go ahead.
Well, I just think in order to be able to speak about things on the level that you are, you've needed to do your homework.
Yeah, 45 years of it. A total path of development. It's true. And it's, if you don't do it that way, if you really do it in a very, very part-time way, the problem is that you don't have enough of your qualitative attention on it. And qualitative attention makes all the difference.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. We have language, I think, even with experience. Do you feel language is a tough barrier to overcome in order to get these ideas that aren't, perhaps they're innately known, but they're not known to a conscious lifestyle?
Well, for example, I'm going to do a live group here at Ahumani in Hawaii, where I live in April. And my intent is to key on what I call soul speak instead of keying on language. We'll talk, there'll be a lot of words, but we have to establish a telepathic bond, a subtle field interweaving space, so that whatever we talk about is part of the same thing. We're all in it together, the same awareness. I was once in a commune cult a long time ago where we did that. We were in total telepathic rapport 24/7. And I know what that takes. And essentially, when you're in soul speak, you, just like with an animal that you're tuning into, if you can do that, you can be more in tune with them than if they could talk, because talk will not convey it. So yes, the verbal aspect has to be secondary, after the fact, part of things, serving things, but not at the center.
Something else in discussing this depth of living that certainly is possible, so many people start separating things, dividing them up into certain vibrations or material densities or this level and that level. And I've always been the stickler about these things in a way. If we're seeing these divisions of vibration, then we're not getting it. What do you have to say about that?
The Age of Aquaria breaks down the kinds of distinctions you're objecting to. It breaks down the hierarchical structures. They have been necessary to get us to this point. They will not take us any further. Because when we make those distinctions toward the future, what we're doing is we're sort of crowding out the infinite bright possibilities of what can be and pushing everything back into categories of what's already been.
Yeah. I noticed something on your website called A Sea of Change, which is about the 12-year dragon. And I thought this might be inspirational for some people to hear about, because there are always, you know, we're on a certain journey here, and yet we're also part of this whole system of change and of movement and placement within history overall.
Yes, there are a lot of bigger cycles at work. Uranus square Pluto is one of the cycles. The 12-year thing has to do with the Jupiter cycle. There are several very major, larger cycles that are converging. And what it all comes down to is that the time period between 2012 and several years from now that we're in the midst of, particularly that immediate time period, is kind of a nexus of a much bigger change. And so essentially we're in the flux and ferment of making shifts that we don't know how to make that take us into way too far afield, a multiplicity and a confounding, and which will shake us loose enough to get us to move on from where we've been, whether we like it or not.
I like the way you put that, shaking us loose. There are many who are attracted and take your class, for instance, and others that are reading different spiritual traditions or practicing various spiritual traditions. And do you think that we're all just part of the ocean, and depending where we are on the wave or in the tide, that's why we're moving? How much of a part do you think there is in actually consciously deciding to move in this direction?
It's a subtle point, because there's a discernment place, but the discernment place usually arises in a spontaneous flow rather than in a kind of a furrowed brow analytical way. So essentially, we are making these decisions and these choices, but often on the fly and often not even fully realizing what we're doing. If we can be clear and lucid in our choices and decisions, it's very useful, but it's secondary to the main thing, which is to learn how to entrust yourself to the wave and not to be too fussy about it, because it's going to take you along the rocks and you're going to have all kinds of experiences, but it's just the way you need to go.
Yeah. And seeing the end of our time here for the interview, Elias, I would like you just to say what you're moved to say right now. I don't want to prompt you with a question, but just allow a moment, you know, just a little of what you're feeling right now and what you want to share.
What I feel the most is that I feel this incredibly strong wave hitting. I've been feeling this a lot recently. There is this aspect in the middle of March of the last of 7 Uranus square Pluto points, and I feel like we're right at the final part of a very extraordinary buildup. And I just want us all to participate in that buildup with a sort of a cross between eager enthusiasm and just the ability to step back from it and realize that whatever happens, it'll lead to the next and the next and the next. Nothing is going to get fixed anywhere. It's all an ongoing continuum of magic and miracle and mystery, and here we are with it.
Yes, and I just felt really glad that fear hasn't come into our conversation, so I don't know why I'm bringing it up now, but I feel like that's big movement right there, that wasn't a focus.
Talking about fear, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah. We're flawed vessels. We're broken vessels, and we're all afraid, and we're all in doubt, and we're all hovering in the dark. And I'm not afraid of our fear, and I'm not pushed into doubt by our doubt, and I'm not made to be intimidated and coerced by the fact that we're having a hard time. To me, it just goes with the territory.
Yeah. Earlier, Elias, you spoke about being in full-on commitment. What does that look like in your life?
I have 7 children, 3 of them grown, 4 with me here. I have an extraordinary place to live at the moment, and I have this kind of this budding star work after 45 years. I've been working on it forever. And what I feel like in my own life is that everything is coming into play now. Everything is revealing itself all together in the same place at the same time. And it's a convergence, it's an extraordinary convergence, and I feel so blessed. I feel so grateful.
If you'd like to discover more of Elias Lonsdale's personal discoveries, which translate very definitely into a journey we are all on, you can go to stargenesiswisdom.com. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, it's Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.